Let's go.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Bingetown TV. This is Brian here with Jimmy, Kyle, and producer Dave. And today we're going to be talking HBO's new hit series, The Last of Us. This is going to be season one, episode six, entitled Kin. And you guys know the drill. Before we get into it, I do want to reroute you over to BingetownTV.com. That's going to contain our full catalog of coverage. We cover The Last of Us, obviously. We are currently covering season one of Yellow Jackets in anticipation for season two, which is right around the corner. Covered The Mandalorian. We're going to be picking that up next month. Shadow and Bone, The Boys. Need I go on? Go over to BingetownTV.com. Check it all out. It's all there. And the easiest way that you can support the podcast, hit that subscribe, follow button, whatever it may be, however you're listening right now, just smash that subscribe button, as my boy Shady Penguin says. But there we go. That is the spiel. Let's get into this episode six. And I think this is another kind of highlighting how we can go from a chaotic, crazy episode and then just hit the brakes and slow it back down. But what we lack in those dramatic, intense, infected-filled moments, we make up for in kind of these heartfelt conversations, a lot more character, or rather relationship growth for our leads, Joel and Ellie. We get to see Tommy again, see what's going on in Wyoming, catch up with him a little bit. Currently, the IMDb rating for this episode is standing at a 9.2. So once again, it has kind of hit the bar that it's established for the quality of this show. And yeah, we are just chugging along here. What are your guys' thoughts?
Bring it in, Rooks.
You got it, Kyle.
Okay. I feel like you usually talk first, but I really liked it. It was a good episode. It feels good to be watching again. I feel like I definitely felt those, two extra days?
Yeah, it was
two
extra days.
9 days in between episodes. So thankfully, Yellow Jackets has been there for me to fill in the gaps. But it just felt really good, honestly, to be back. I was really interested to see how they would deal with the immediate aftermath, what we were going to do, because we did mention at the end of last episode, they had their truck and all their supplies at the beginning of it, and now they're just on foot with some backpacks, so what the hell, they're only at Kansas City. I liked the fact that we just got a time skip. We don't really need to watch them walk across the country. We're just getting right back into it. Everything was good, I thought. Obviously, the ending was shocking, to say the least. It was just, I don't think I could say a bad thing about the episode.
Yeah, it's hard to come off of, in my opinion, was the best episode of the season. And it was a shock to see that we went ahead to 3 months later. I thought that was a pleasant surprise. I actually really liked that. Because getting into it, we saw the snow and everything. So it was a little bit of shock for me seeing where we were at. And I liked that they were able to skip ahead a little bit, because we don't need all the traveling montages and things like that. Those are just unnecessary. A little bit of a slower episode, as both you guys have said, but overall, very solid episode. It was great seeing Tommy back, and Ellie just continues to just be so hilarious and so funny.
Tommy looks great.
He really
does. Yeah, he does. And Joel says it too. He's fantastic. You didn't age, bro.
He looks so good.
He's got the hair, dude. That's the hair that we can aspire to.
Yeah. Confident mustache too. He's rocking the shit out of it.
It just needs to be gray, and then Kyle will be all in on the Tommy look.
Yeah, he's not there yet. He's no Perry, but he's getting close.
Jim, thoughts on the episode?
Yeah. I agree. I love this episode. It's kind of cool how they're going almost back and forth between slower emotional type episodes and then ramping it up for big episodes. Obviously, with the ending of this episode going into the next episode, we're assuming they're going to be hitting the gas pedal again. So these are amazing relationship building, episodes for Joel and Ellie. And I'm really, really excited to talk to both Kyle and Dave, especially Kyle, about what he feels about finally seeing Tommy again. We got there. You know, we were wondering if it was going to be Endgame or if he was even going to be alive. We were talking about, is he going to be there? And we got him. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it. There was a lot of really cool Easter eggs in this episode. Some of them are from part two, which I will not bring up. One I have to talk about, and I will choose my words carefully because it's so good. I have to bring it up. But otherwise, I'm going to try to just pump the brakes on that. Brian, you haven't played part two, right?
I have not.
Okay. So, yeah, I'm definitely going to pump the brakes on some of the Easter eggs. But one of them, when we get there, I have to talk about.
Looking forward to it. But yeah, I don't think I've expressed how I feel about it, but I'm with the general consensus. Another great episode. it's a little bit harder to identify like those standout jaw-dropping scenes because we didn't have like an infected making out with Tess this episode, but there were some some emotional beats that really cut deep in this one, and I'm excited to get to it in these discussions.
I mean, honestly, emotional beat made you think of Tess making out with an infected. They literally call back to it, so like you get it in that sense of like you think back on their journey often throughout the
season. I haven't thought about that moment since our recording, and way to bring that back into my head.
What if Tommy was like, "How's Tess?" and Joel's like, cheated on me, man.
Yeah, right. Yeah, she found another man.
Well, she's got a new man. Yeah,
I guess the sad part is
totally just made out with that dude. Told me to leave and just made out with
that. I guess. Yeah, he has no idea that actually happened.
All right, let's get this party started, Brian.
Let's do it. So, you know, we have the recap title sequence, and unfortunately, they start with where we ended last episode. We have to relive the suicide, and then immediate change to black. 3 month time skip. Immediately they're establishing it is winter now, or it is cold now. There is snow on the ground. We get a lot of these shots of just like landscapes and stuff. And we start off this episode meeting kind of this elderly couple in whatever state they're in at the moment, presumably Wyoming, just an older couple that has made it through the outbreak, and they're just chilling. Honestly, these two were characters. Yeah, they were great comedic relief right at the start. And they are really pushing home this river of death narrative. If you keep going west, you're gonna die. The best way west is to just turn around and head east.
I loved it. It was so cool to think about. Like, he has the line where he says, you know, we moved here before you were even born, to Joel, which is really funny. So like, honestly, for them, it feels like not much has changed. They literally moved out there to not meet people. They probably haven't seen someone in a very long time. So they are truly just kicking it. Like, when I'm thinking about the outbreak, like, I guess it technically happens 2003, but like it happened now. I would like how much we would have lost, like collectively the four of us, like, you know, our PS5s and all of this shit, and they just are just kicking
our podcast would be done. Yeah,
also, that like they would just they're just hanging out hunting.
And that's part of the reason why their interactions with Ellie were so interesting, because they I'm sure they haven't met many, if at all, children born
in a long time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Children born into this time period. And the lack of manners and swearing just coming from Ellie was cracking them up. It was cracking me up. The wife was hilarious when she was just answering yes nonstop. And the husband's like, did you tell him the truth? And she's like, yeah. Like, she answered it like a question.
Are you
like,
telling me the truth?
Yeah, that was really good.
It was a really
good. I'd
love
to be a fly on the wall, and they're like, conversations, just the two of them, like hanging out. Like,
yeah.
No Joel and Ellie there to like probe them, just like them interacting in their life.
They definitely really bicker, funny. Just small time bickering all the time, but just would be so funny to watch.
Can you imagine being like, you know, they basically said it. They secluded themselves because they don't like people. They want to be secluded. And, you know, they know that shit's going on, obviously. So can you imagine just being secluded and then one day just being like, Jesus Christ, what's going on here with randomly infected people?
That's a great point.
Really quickly, have they ever mentioned how the clickers survive through the winter? Or do they still just wander around? Can they just survive still? Or do they have to like hibernate? Or did they ever mention that in the previous episodes? I can't remember.
Nah, no. They haven't gotten that deep with it.
I feel like we got like a outline, right? Doesn't Joel mention like how long they can survive?
Do funguses do well in the cold? I can't even remember.
Fungi,
yeah. Sorry.
Probably depend. But I mean, I this
it
one
it adapts mutated
because of what, the warm weather or whatever, according to Batiatis from episode one. So
probably not then. So
it might be safe. I love to the question that the cold's bad for it.
Yeah,
you guys just want to know how these guys work, all the ins and outs of the infection.
I was just wondering if we'll ever get to that, if they explain how they survive it during these periods of cold. Maybe it explains also the lack of clickers and, you know, infected in this episode, potentially.
That's why Ellie's immune, because she's cold-blooded. Her body
she's cold-blooded,
is lower than normal. Nailed it. So it can't, it can't
survive cold. Yeah, I mean, it's very similar, Dave, to what they said with Bill and Frank, where they were pretty much secluded, where there wasn't too many infected. And they said, a couple stragglers here and there. Can you imagine being really secluded in Wyoming to the point where there's really not going to be people? Like Tommy had said, you know, some stragglers and some colonies from the cities, but really, you know, I could pop some heads, dude. I could do that from a half mile out. So
that's my
I guess the lack of people equals lack of infected.
Yeah, I guess my mom wants to move to Montana. and just be not around people. So I guess that's good for me thinking that A, they'll be safe, and then B, I can just head out there.
Yeah.
You have a safe spot. I feel like your parents would do well in Montana, which is a big plot of land. Good for them. That's a happy thought. Anyway,
do they have any needs of herding sheep? Would they like to herd sheep?
I don't know. That might be too much work for them.
That seems like something Kyle would want to do.
Yeah. I would cry if I had to kill one.
Although they do have a nice Australian cattle dog to help them herd those sheep.
This is very true. Yeah. This is very true.
Yeah. Anyway, leaving these old native people's house, Joel kind of walks out and he has what seems to be a panic attack, which is kind of a new element to the character. I don't think we've actually seen him break down like that. And of course, Ellie is right on the scene asking him like a million questions, like while he's in the thick of it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, just give him a beat. But the one thing that kind of stood out to me was just Ellie says, just a reminder, if you die, I'm fucked. And she kind of says it jokingly, but that just kind of foreshadows kind of an ongoing narrative that will come up throughout this episode of just Sally's general abandonment issues and what would her life be without Joel. And obviously the very end of the episode, kind of, we don't know what's going to happen there, but certainly she is going to have to fend for herself. So just that one little line, just a reminder, if you die, I'm fucked, right here within the first 5 minutes, sets up the rest of the episode. But
I also just stomp on your momentum there of like, I guess right before that, before they leave and the old guy and Ellie's like, you know, you're not going to scare us. Then he looks at Joel and is like, well, I scared him. And that was because like we've never, like you said, never really seen Joel in that. So like I literally sat up, I think a little straighter when he said that, because it was like, okay, like this is going to be like this now.
Did you guys have any thoughts at all that the people that they were scared of across the river could be Tommy? Or did you just think hunters or just too many infected? Or
I'm like embarrassed to say no, but I didn't. In hindsight, it feels very obvious, but
I think the episode preview kind of gave it away for me.
Your previews, Dave.
What are you still doing watching those?
Luke keeps them on, so I watch. It gives me a little bit, but so I didn't think it was going to be Tommy, the ones like greeting him, but I figured the people that they were referring to was Tommy's crowd. That's what I gathered from it.
Okay.
I guess I've always had this expectation that it's going to be like a gritty kind of like battle for Tommy. And we might be, and I don't want to put the cart before the horse with that conversation, but that's kind of like a general summary. So I don't think I was thinking that it would be kind of as easy as it was.
Right. So you thought Tommy could have been like almost like a hostage or
some kind of danger, I guess it felt like
something
was,
where
they're going out there to save Tommy.
Yeah. Which is definitely going to be something we need to talk about when it comes to,
yes, we will.
We're coming to save Tommy and this is what we get.
Anyway, moving on, Dave, you referenced how you like that we just fast forwarded to where we are now. We didn't get travel montages. However, in this episode, we got quite a few travel montages, the first of which is right here. And the travel montages are kind of great because I think it's just HBO just flexing. Yes, we can do it and make it look fantastic, which mission accomplished. They come across this first river of death, which is the phony river of death, not the real river of death, but they walk across. And then we get this scene where they make camp for the night. They look up and we can see the northern lights, which I had no clue you can actually see them from some parts of the United States. I did not know that was a thing.
That's awesome.
And
this is like, I don't know if this is correct or not, but I feel like, I guess obviously in that part of the US there's already not a ton of light pollution, but I guess after 20 plus years of society falling, like I'm sure that the sky is probably sick almost anywhere in the US at this point.
Yeah, that's true.
At that point,
Ellie looking up at the northern lights made me feel like I was experiencing the video game. That felt definitely like a shot right out of it. Just the camera angles and everything. It felt like it was a replica.
Funny there's enough, a lot of those in this episode. No, it wasn't, but there's a lot. Dave, no, that's a good call because that really was like very like,
felt like in a video game
cinematic.
Yeah,
100%. But there's a couple in this episode and me and Brian will talk about them. And it's just like in episode 2 with the museum and oh man, some of them are just so exactly right and it's crazy. Gives you those feels.
Yeah, so they make camp for the night and it's kind of the first of their heart-to-hearts this whole episode where they share, or rather Joel gives her a nip of the liquor and Ellie's just like, okay, what if the cure works and we actually do save the world? What's your life going to be after the zombie apocalypse? And he's like, I want to like raise sheep on a ranch.
That's the Texas in him.
Game is no surprise to me. That's what he wanted to do.
She wants to be an astronaut.
Like, what about
though?
Me? Ellie's like, you want me to help you?
That kind of sucks. Cause I mean, that feels like it's a pipe dream already, just in general, the amount of population that becomes an astronaut now. But imagine like a post-apocalyptic space program. Like, what the fuck does that even look more, like?
How many
years does it take to get that? Yeah, to get that going. I can't imagine how many.
Oh, at least, probably another 50 at least. Yeah.
I love that as a dream for her, though. That's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, she's young and, well, no, she's not. 50 I mean, years, she'll be 64. So I don't think she's going up and she's 64.
It makes sense. I mean, she explains it perfectly with having herself grown up in the QZ and not really getting to experience life outside of the walls. It's a perfect dream for her. I do hope she gets to live that dream. I don't think we'll ever see her reach that dream, but she is definitely capable and strong enough to be an astronaut. That's for sure.
It was also cool because I guess when we, whatever episode it is, I guess 3, when we passed by like the downed plane and she was like, you guys got to fly in that. Like, that's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Joel's like, it was whatever.
Just like the cars when she's like, this is like a spaceship. And he's like, dude, this is a shitty ass car.
That's true.
Yeah. Okay. It's cool. It's really cool. It's very interesting to think about that kind of stuff. The stuff that if you're born during that time period, you just have no idea. And we're going to get to it, during all the travel montage, talking about what's fourth down and how does football work. It just kills me. It's crazy.
Anyway. All right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So continuing on with the scene, Ellie kind of expresses doubt in the cure and Joel reassures her. Hey, if Merlene says it could work, then I think it's a possibility that's on the table. Merlene doesn't lie.
Just really going to quickly step in here and just be like, when I first heard this line, I was absolutely thrilled because it's a show that Joel is finally becoming that fatherly, confident figure. Because we saw last episode, 2 episodes ago, you know, anytime they were in a sticky situation, he didn't really have the right words to help her feel better about what was going on. There was only like a select few times that he maybe pulled that off. But here he had the confidence to be like, yo, we're going to get a cure for this. And I'm sure even he himself doesn't even believe that fully. But the fact that he says it to her just reassure it just shows how far he's come.
Probably up until episode 5-ish, maybe part of 4, he would be exactly like he was when him and Tess were talking about it, when he's like, this is a freaking pipe dream. This is nothing. It's not going to happen.
Right.
So definitely I agree with you, Dave. A lot of character growth there for a boy, Joel. And even the situation where Ellie talks about the fact that she used her blood to try to save Henry, or I'm sorry. Sam. Wow, I'm a piece of shit. No, trying to save Sam. There could have been a part of Joel, however many months ago in their journey or weeks or whatever, where he could have been like, you didn't tell me that he was infected. You sat there with him for 8 hours.
I was expecting it.
Yeah, like you're a stupid little kid who wants to put your blood on him and you think that's going to work. But instead, he was like, oh, you know, he didn't say anything mean. He just said, you know, it's a little bit more complicated than that and moved on. You know, he's definitely growing.
He's learning how to be a girl dad again.
Yeah, right.
So. And while he is learning to girl dad, Ellie is learning how to be kind of a reliable companion, someone who can competently have his back, which is evidenced. He falls asleep when he says, oh, I'll take the first and the second watch. And she, instead of waking him up and says, hey, I want to sleep some more, can you get the second watch? She just picks up the gun and gets second watch. And obviously, if she woke him up, he'd be like, I got it. But she's like, nah, this is me. I got this. I thought this was a great scene. They're both just... this relationship is working and it's really starting to come to fruition this episode.
The only thing she can't really do is still shoot a gun.
Yeah, well, this is her first rifle.
Yeah.
Give her some slack, man.
No, but she did cover. Slack. She covered all the 60s. She got the high ground. So kudos to her. She's definitely a fast learner. And we've said that multiple times on the podcast, but it's cool just seeing her take this next level of like leadership almost.
Yeah, I had a huge smile on my face when she's like, I guess I'm a natural, bro. Like,
yeah,
it's just like, yeah, let's go.
I mean, this goes back to the theme and Brian already alluded to it. And we're going to get to it through the rest of this episode where you can tell that she's getting to the point where she's like, this journey's kind of ending. And that probably means me and Joel are dunzo. you know, and you could tell that she's sneaking some comments in to see where what he's thinking. And yeah. then you could tell she basically hammers it down later in the episode. Like, no, you're not leaving me. I don't want you to leave me. You know, they're really growing close to each other. And obviously, I'm sure for you and Kyle and Dave, you were wondering, like, did he grow as attached to Ellie as she did to him? And then we obviously get that answer towards the end of the episode. But Brian, continue. I got ahead of myself.
No, you're good. So she took second watch and Joel kind of reprimands her, but there's an understanding there. And then we get another nice little travel montage where, you know, it's a very ominous bridge. I'm just thinking to myself, the snowy vibes really work for this show. I just think it looks great, all these landscapes, but they cross another river. And I guess as they're walking along the river, they just have these dumb kind of quote unquote throwaway lines where she's like trying to teach herself how to whistle. And like,
yeah,
previously in the series, he just wouldn't engage in this kind of stuff. But now he's like, oh, you don't know how to whistle. And it's like a back and forth. I think this is where they talk about like dressing versus undressing, like the guts of an animal. It's just like these great little lines that make the show as good as it is. Eventually, they keep following the river unless there's anything anybody has to say.
No, I was just expecting them to come across the plane crash from Yellow Jackets is all, really.
Well, I don't know Melanie what that is, but I'm laughing anyway.
Yeah, Melanie Lynskey makes her return, but this time it's old Shauna.
I'll get there. I'll get there. I'm going to start my Yellow Jackets watch very, very soon. But yeah, the only thing that I was going to say is the bridge, man. I was getting anxious for them. If I was them, and you know, as soon as you take one step on that bridge, you're cornered pretty much. So yeah. It's just, you know, that was making me anxious and stressed out, but they made it past it fine.
Yeah, I'm surprised Joel didn't click in his head. Oh, maybe that wasn't the actual, maybe this is the real river, but like it takes them seeing the dam. And then Ellie's like, maybe this is the actual river. And Joel, like, the realization hits him like a ton of bricks as he's fiddling with the map. They get swarmed by these cowboys on horseback. Like, they are completely outnumbered, outgunned, everything you could imagine. This was probably the most intense scene of the episode for me. And me and Jimmy probably knew what this was going to lead to. Right. I mean, it was pretty similar to the events of the game. But for Dave and Kyle, who already said they weren't expecting Tommy to be on the other side of this river, this must have been pretty intense for you guys.
Yeah, I don't even know what I thought was possible in this, you know, in this scene. And I guess Joel even talks about it later when he's like, I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to do. And I was thinking the same thing of like, what could they possibly do besides let the dog know? I don't know if that has like greater implications for anything of like, what is going on with her, like internally, of whether like her body, it's been so long since she was infected that it's like now like metabolizing the infection versus it just like being stuck. Like we've seen the stuff like in her arm. I don't know if that means anything, or it's just the fact that the dog was not a narc and isn't as intense as like the device was. I don't know if we'll ever get there. That's just what I was thinking about.
I was thinking more of that. It's probably just not as a reliable form as just a regular, you know, device that's, you know, purposely meant to find the disease. Whereas a dog, you know, like you said, could have got distracted with Ellie's personality, things like that.
Incredible. You ever seen videos of like people who have like allergies and they like will put a food and like they purposely like do as much as they can to like the smallest little bit of food in some like huge bag and the dogs know immediately. So.
Yeah. And I mean, speaking of the sheep herding and everything, dogs, when they come to herding, are pretty damn smart. But no, I'm with you. But I still think the device just overall would probably just be the most trustworthy thing. I didn't really want to think too much of it, but I had those same kind of questions running through my head.
I thought it was a cool dynamic that even having that come up where, you know, this dog's going to smell you. And if you're infected, he's going to tear your ass up. And I knew what was going to happen. But when he started to growl a little bit, I was going like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
I was seriously going, OK, what's going to happen here? Because, again, this is a situation where, you know, my thought, because it's tough when you actually know what's going to happen and the dog thing's not in the game unless I'm just totally forgetting. But my anticipation here was that the dog was going to growl and maybe go after Ellie. And then Tommy was actually going to like be like one of the people like walking up later and kind of stop the whole thing or whatever. But I see the dog growling and I'm getting my blood pressure's going up. you know, because there's nothing you can do if you're Joel. There's like 12 of them around you.
Yeah.
She's done.
I mean, like, the ultimate trump card, I guess, is like the immunity thing. But like, that's like, you can't I was thinking, is he going to say something about it? Like, are they going to rat herself out right here? And then we'll see what the fallout of that is. No, it was a very well done scene.
The whole thing with the immunity card is that to prove the immunity, you have to show the bite marks. And once people see the bite marks, they've said it a million times, they're going to shoot on sight and not ask questions because it is such a unique situation. But I thought it was a great scene. My explanation is dogs just instinctually know. And if it instinctually knew that she was not a threat, whether it's like quote unquote infected or not, he would be chill with her.
I mean, isn't that
the dog knew Granny was sick, man?
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
Granny was sick in episode one.
Just
going to
say that in episode one.
That's a great point. Yeah, the ultimate vibe master. That's a good point. Okay.
Yeah,
I like. It's good show planning that they brought the dog element back up 5 episodes later and established it in the pilot, because like Jimmy said, that really wasn't a thing they used in the video games, but I think it really worked in the shows. So after she passes the vibe check, they're like, okay. You just bought yourself 10 seconds. Why are you here? He's like, hey, I'm just passing through looking for my brother. Our girl, Rutina Wesley of True Blood fame. Nobody was on that pitch down.
Yeah,
Kyle,
no,
I thought
don't
maybe
know
you would know that because Darlene and Kelly strike me as True Blood people.
Oh, they were fans. I don't know anything except for Suki.
Yeah, Rutina Wesley. And actually, her character's mother was Indra. That was an awesome pitch down to go through those characters, but Rutina Wesley just played a badass in True Blood. I love her casting as Maria here. It really worked. But she kind of assumes the lead and is like, okay, you're looking for Tommy, let's go reunite you guys, which takes us to their commune, and it gets name dropped later as Jackson, Wyoming.
Really cool.
Yeah, and this is exactly where the first part, they cross over into the scary river, the Death River. They get surrounded, but right before they get surrounded, right before Ellie says, oh man, is this actually the bad river? You see the dam, and that is like straight from the video game. And it's like, when you're playing the video game, you're like, man, this is going to be a sweet level to play because you know, you're going to be walking around and killing people in there and doing your thing. But also they walk right into this Jackson community, and it is 100% a mirror of the video game. So it was just like brought to life, the video game, and it was really, really cool to see.
That's cool. Do you think, and I guess this is probably a question that's just getting shouted to the void, but is it, do you think that they based it off the video game? Like the video game level off of the actual, because I feel like they talked on the behind the episodes that it was like an actual town. That like they had to like ask
I didn't see the behind the episode.
Like, if they could film in there, like the whatever the area is with all the sheep and everything and the stables, like they built that on like a parking lot in the middle of the town.
Oh, so. Really? Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't know where they got the inspiration for the game, but all I know is that they just perfectly mirrored it into the show.
That's
it
awesome.
Could be that they had inspiration. Good. Yeah, it was super cool.
I wonder how long, like how many years did they ever mention how many years that played, like how that restoration of Jackson had been going on for, because that seemed like as good of a civilization as you're going to get.
Maria said that they established the settlement with a handful of people about 7 years ago. She mentioned they got the dam and electricity working not long after, but they said it was a gated community already. And then they just extended out from there and just accepted people in.
Oh my God, Jackson, Wyoming, 10 years from there, they're going to be sending rockets to the moon, baby, at that rate.
So I just want to say here, and I'm going to bring it up right in the beginning of this part, just so that there's no allusion to where in this, the rest of this episode, I'm bringing up the Easter egg for part two, but there is a situation that comes up in part two, and I'm choosing my words carefully. There's a situation in part two that they talk about part one, but it's not in part one. But the person, Neil Druckmann, who created the game and now is the showrunner for the show, used his skills to actually include this in part one, so that when you say in part two, hey, you remember when in part one, it actually happens in the show. Instead, you know, in the game, in part one of the game, it didn't happen. So it was amazing to see. I'm not going to say anything else, but everyone who knows part two is going like is fist pumping when they saw it. So that's it. That's all I'm going to say.
I think the internet might have spoiled it for me.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure they did because deal, it exploded. Yeah, it exploded for the internet.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Jimmy, a lot of these scenes in The Last of Us Part One, the video game, did occur in the setting of the hydroelectric dam, less involved in the settlement.
Right.
Gotcha.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, it seems like a positive change.
Yeah. I kind of read why they made that narrative change, and it's going to make sense for a lot of reasons, I think, as the show progresses. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so now we have a couple scenes. The initial them going to the mess hall. Ellie gets her first proper meal, potentially of her entire life. She's like, "Damn, shit, this stuff is good." But yeah, very awkward vibes at the table. Joel has to reprimand Ellie for cursing, and then Tommy says, "Hey, me and Maria are married," and Ellie has to be like, "Joel, you're supposed to be polite and say congrats, dude." Very begrudgingly pries that out of him. But what are you guys thinking of this scene? And then they go on the tour.
Just awkward, like you said. I mean, it's funny from our perspective of, yeah, like watching Ellie and Joel kind of like bicker at each other a little bit and like nudging for like certain different things. But yeah, just awkward. And I mean, honestly, I feel like you get a bad vibe from Maria in this.
That was going to be my comment. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Is that Maria was rubbing me the wrong way pretty much the whole episode, to be honest. She's still, even at the end of it, if Tommy had went with Ellie to the university, I think she would have lost her shit on Joel. Yeah. And freaked out at Tommy. So she definitely rubs me the wrong way, but definitely an awkward experience. I mean, this ties into what we were theorizing in like episodes 3 and 4 of the podcast when we were saying like, is there going to be some tension between Tommy? And it seems like the culmination of everything that's happened over the years from their separation is definitely playing a factor into it. Now that Joel has Ellie and, you know, Tommy's now married to someone else, and that, you know, he even brought it up with, she's kind of the reason why he stopped keeping in touch with him in the first place. But all that tension's kind of leading to this awkwardness right here. And then in the second meeting with Tommy and Joel is when they kind of let it all out. And that's when we get the real tension going.
I felt better about Maria then. I feel like this initial encounter, I was like, what is her deal?
I was
and
so
you get the info and I was like, okay, I'm not that I really like her, I guess, as a character, but I understand everything about her. I'm just obviously riding Team Joel till the dad dies.
The fact that Tommy has the information that Ellie's immune worried me because of Maria. Like, I don't know what she's gonna be scheming because of with that knowledge. But again, she might be a totally like good character. It's just right now she's a little bit sketchy.
I don't see her as a schemer. She just seems very protective of.
It's always going to be a problem where you have your homie, the main character, that you want to go out into trouble. You want to get in some trouble, and then there's somebody protecting the fam, trying to hold them back. You know, and there's a million obviously examples of this, but one of the biggest ones is Rita from Dexter. I mean, I don't know who you guys have read Dexter, but he's a freaking serial killer, and he has this gem of a wife who is just like, I'm not going to say anymore, but people like hate her, and it's like she's like the best. You can't forget that he's the protagonist, but he's a goddamn serial killer here.
Everyone's like, yeah, Team Dexter, like Rita's such a bitch, but she just wants him to be like a dad.
Right, exactly. So, but yeah, I don't want to gloss over this initial meeting when you first see Tommy, because amazing acting with Gabriel Luna and Pedro Pascal meeting together. You see the emotion in Pedro's face and Joel's face when he finally gets to Tommy. And there's like the realization, like, oh, man, he's just freaking standing there helping some guy build something. You know, he's not in trouble. He actually says, like, oh, I came to save you, man. I want to know what you guys thought, Kyle and Dave. I think that once we get into the town, it's probably like, all right, your expectations are going to be a little bit different, because you open up the town door, you see the Jackson community. It's not dangerous looking or anything. So I'm assuming you guys assume that he's just going to be a member of the town. But the fact that we were discussing for 5 episodes, like you said, Kyle, I mean, is he going to be a hostage? Is he going to be like on the wrong side of the Fireflies? Is Joel going to have to kick some ass? And really, it's just, hey, man, what's up? How you doing? How you been? Missed you.
I liked it a lot. Only because I would say that very recently, this is the thing of we've been doing the podcast for 3 years now, and obviously we've been watching television and movies and stuff forever, and I feel like I'm now being more like self-aware of like when something is actually bad versus something like I don't like it because of my own expectations that I had. Fair to say that it's bad because of the way I was expecting things to happen. And I liked this because I, like I said, was expecting it to be like some knockdown, drag out fight. Like, we got to save Tommy, but he's just like raising sheep
and like
fixing houses in fucking Jackson, Wyoming. He's got a wife. I'm like, okay, I really like it. Honestly, it's nice because Tommy, like I had said, I guess in the first episode, just seems like a nice guy. He's a little, maybe he's not like an idiot, but he's kind of like a hopeless romantic. He's just out there being Tommy, and it's nice that he kind of carved out this life for himself when I was expecting just complete mayhem and chaos.
Yeah, when we get introduced to like how Tommy's been communicating and how that communication has lost base, it does make it seem like it was like some kind of invasion or some kind of threat was going on. But I think it's a nice change of pace because everything up until this point has already gone to shit. Like the original drop off Ellie, like Joel shouldn't have even been with her this long. You know, it should have been an episode. What was that, like 2 or 3 when they were supposed to meet up with the troops and
that
went all wrong. And then with Henry and Sam, and then getting to Kansas City and everything. It's it's nice knowing that we can, I guess, catch a break here with characters. Cause I'm still riding the high of last episode where I'm like, I'm not trying to attach myself to anyone anymore.
Right.
It is
riding
nice.
The lows, man.
Yeah, it is nice getting
riding the highs.
I guess, riding the highs. It wouldn't be a way.
There's no highs coming.
It was
out
a great episode.
Riding the lows. Riding the lows, yeah.
Yeah, riding those lows, dude.
But it was a very emotional reconnection between the two.
The line that you quoted is it perfectly sums everything up, where he's like, I came here to save you. And it just kind of is like, it's like, oh, this is like really funny and like not ironic, but it's just like, I'm here to save you. But in reality, Joel's the one that is the most fucked up. Like, Tommy's just absolutely feet up kicking it.
Well, this is perfect because honestly, this situation is mayhem for Joel in his own head. He's getting there thinking like he would much rather just like plain clear cut, you know what, here's my mission, I have to go get Tommy, get the hell out, get Ellie there, and I'm not worrying about anything else. And now he's like, dude, my brother, he has a wife, he has some kid, he's gonna have a kid, he's having this nice life, he basically seems like he's judging me for the shit we did in the past, I don't really need to save him anymore, I don't have a brother that needs saving. Oh my god, my head's exploding.
That is such a good point. Joel is ready for like a physical battle for Tommy. He is not ready for like an emotional like conversation and fight in that sense of like winning his brother back in a way. So that's a great way to think about it.
Dude, he's in such a good emotional state right now. He's so ready for these conversations.
Yeah, right.
If we know anything, he has the toolkit to deal with it too.
Yeah. If we know anything about him, he loves talking to people about his feelings and just talk this out as long as it takes. But yeah, just some good conversation during the tour. We're walking through Jackson, like Jimmy says, the town looks great. Like I said, Maria's give some background on the settlement. It started 7 years ago with just a handful of people. It's really grown the way we keep it going. You know, we maintain its secrecy. We don't broadcast it or advertise it. And as we've seen, you know, they are very defensive about outsiders, although they are receptive to them. I guess there has to be some reason why their numbers have kept growing. If you can prove you're not infected and you're willing to help the cause, whatever. Tommy is talking about his new pride and joy with the 700 with a variable scope. I think we're about to level up again in terms of our gun wear.
At the expense of Tommy, potentially.
Nah, Tommy, he's got plenty of toys to play with. Yeah.
He's
I'm
fine,
still
dude.
Thinking of Henry and Sam, and he was talking about having the kid. He's talking about his new gun. I was like, oh my God, he's going to totally give it to Joel, and Tommy's just going to die, and that's going to be his last memento.
In one of the funniest parts of the episode, the glass shattering moment where Tommy realizes that he is a communist, and given Tommy and Joel's background, they are most likely some right-leaning patriots prior to the outbreak. And just like, as everybody keeps walking forward, and he's just like, ah, shit. He's like, okay, that. Just have to recalibrate here. Joel gives him a little like side glance, like, yeah, bro, you know what you are now. Anyway, but as we all know, communism really works the smaller the population size. So, you know, probably pretty good, especially if you are, if you have a unifying outside force such as a zombie apocalypse. That will make communism work very well. Any hoozles? Yes. So we continue the conversation. They hook Joel and Ellie up with the house across the street from theirs, and we will get to familiarize ourselves with that house later. And Maria says, oh, yeah, I'll set Ellie up, leaving Tommy and Joel with an opportunity to catch up. And we have the first of Tommy and Joel's heart to hearts, where it doesn't go so great the first
time.
Didn't
go well, man.
Yeah. Also worth mentioning, Ellie gets very nervous at even the prospect of Joel being separated for like an hour for a conversation. Yep. She's like, Joel, is this cool? But it's cool.
It's a good flag. The conversation needed to happen. It's just like not a fun one, I feel like, for them to have. It needed to happen in the sense that Joel can only have that conversation in one way, and that's the way that it went down, of like confrontational. Like, it could have been a somewhat pleasant chat about the things that they've done, but obviously it had to turn the way it did. Like, and like Dave had said, it felt like an emotional release a little bit. It set them up for that second conversation that they have later. So I really liked this scene. They were just, I mean, again, I was just still blown away by like, they have like the bar mats in the bar.
Yeah, right.
Like, where the fuck did they get those? It's just like a fully stocked up
they
bar.
They made
like,
it through just, the apocalypse, man. They just like master scavengers.
Yeah, it's true. So,
but yeah, I mean, it was cool seeing Joel just like rub the front of the bar and just be like, damn, it's been a while. Yeah.
I'm going to be honest, also, though. I think I was just going to say the only thing I think Joel was kind of the asshole here. Am I wrong for saying that? In this conversation, not the third one that they have.
So yeah. I don't know if this is a hot take, but for me, I honestly think that Joel deserves to be mad at Tommy if Tommy straight up just stopped talking to him through the radio when they had an agreement that if Tommy stops talking, it's danger, danger, danger. I mean, I totally agree that Joel should have, and we know he can't really, but should have been more pleasant when he finds out he's gonna have a kid, be like, dude, oh my gosh, like all that kind of stuff, and not cause the confrontation, but it'd still be like, hey man, like, I mean, geez, you kind of sandbagged me, bro. Like, you're living the dream in this community. You could have at least said it on the, I know you're not supposed to say it on the radio, and that's like rule number one, probably, but you gotta like, you can't just radio silence me and expect me not to come and try to save you. And then when I get here, be like, hey man, what's up? How you been? Glad you didn't die on the way. Like, yeah, I just think it's, yeah,
I agree. I think Tommy is someone who, like, he felt, I think, guilty about it. I don't think it was like a completely remorseful thing. I just don't know if Joel like picked up as well on that.
I mean, I think he did too, but at the same time, it's like, if I'm Tommy, I would feel so remorseful, because you literally are basically telling your brother, first of all, you make this town shows up in your life, and now you're living a happily ever after, and you're making your brother think you're dead. And also that means like you're not telling your brother like this town exists to bring him to safety. There's just a lot of moving parts to this. And it kind of makes it like, yo, you're not doing that great for your boy, Tommy. But again, Joel could have gone about having that conversation a different way. Like Joel could have totally won that argument and made himself look better. Hey, I'm glad you're having a kid, blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah, hug him out and be like, but man, come on, dude. Like, I thought you were dying. I thought you were dead. I thought I was coming to save you for real. I made the joke, but
his response to Tommy is so funny, though. But Tommy's like, I hope I'll be a good dad. And he's like, well, I guess we'll find out. Or it's like, holy shit, man. Oh, God.
Yeah. I mean,
I think I agree with you. He was probably, quote unquote, winning the confrontation maybe up until that point, where it was like, okay, like that should have been almost like a watershed. Like, he's safe. My brother's safe. Like, he's building a life for himself. He's going to be a father. Like, all kind of ended well, while he's just, Joel still doesn't have that step in him.
I mean, also, and it really, it's not, it's again, going back to the whole Ellie says this as well. Like, it's not Ellie's fault. It's not Tommy's fault. The test got infected. Tess and Joel decided to take the job. and they wanted the battery for Tommy, though.
Yep.
You know, there could have been something there where Joel was, you know, when he says, how's Tess? He's like, well, you know, dude, we were coming to freaking save you and she got infected and she's dead. You know, so it's just, I don't know. It's one of those things. But yeah, I mean, our boy Joel just doesn't have a way with words, so he has to lose that fight.
And I mean, that's also the last comment I'll make is that this is kind of the first maybe inclination we'll get that Maria kind of big dogs Tommy at points.
Oh, yeah.
Seems like she kind of wears
Jada maybe
the pants a little bit in the relationship, especially because this scene is like perfectly juxtaposed with Maria and Ellie, and how Maria is kind of like trying to warn Ellie a little bit. I guess we'll talk more about it, about like Joel, about his past and shit. And obviously Maria is anti-Joel. So I think Joel kind of picks up on that as well. So it's kind of that wedge there.
So in speaking to the past in the context of Joel and Tommy's first conversation, Joel, it kind of just shows the difference between how they've kind of accepted what they've done in the past, because Joel is still like, those things that I did in the past, I did them for these reasons. They were justified. And Tommy straight up says, first off, we did those things. Second off, those things weren't just things. It was us murdering people. And Tommy says, clean slate. I don't judge it for it. We both did it. We did what we needed to do to survive. But then he's like, I now know that there were other ways to survive open to us. We were just lousy at them. That was just the only option we knew. And that was just kind of a difference in maturity, I guess, between the two, even with Tommy being the younger brother. And it's also kind of been established with us that back in the day, Joel was kind of the leader of the two and kind of Tommy's protector. But we'll actually get to the Ellie and Maria conversation where Tommy told Maria, painted a big different picture, I guess I should say. But all in all, I thought this was a great conversation between the two that wraps up with the reveal that Maria is 6 months pregnant. You know, he's going to be a dad. We'll see how that goes. And then he stumbles out. And instead of having a healthy conversation, he yells at his brother and has a panic attack outside where, oh, by the way, he sees a Sarah lookalike in the crowd. And a lot of emotions are happening to our boy here in Wyoming.
Yeah.
That was wild because it's when it's a Sarah lookalike and then who has a kid. And it's like, oh, my God, because he's, I mean, up there.
Because Sarah would have a kid.
Yeah,
probably, Sarah would be, if she chose to.
Hopefully not. This is perfect.
Well, yeah, hopefully not again.
To say this. Like we said. Yeah, Tommy, my boy, nice guy. But what are you doing knocking somebody up? I guess they have this level of security here in this town and they feel comfortable. But I don't know. It still rubs me the wrong way. People impregnating
Just like,
during this.
Yeah, I mean. That's like what he said when he goes, I'm terrified. That's like the normal, like, I'm going to be a dad. I'm terrified for what's going to happen to my kid and how I'm going to be a father. But really, it's like, yo, Tommy, you're terrified times 500,000 because all of that. Plus, you're bringing a child into a zombie apocalypse where all it has to do is this town get overrun and it's going to shit for, you know, your family. But, you know, I don't know. I can't judge. I don't know what I would do, you know, in a zombie apocalypse except get infected and then bite you guys.
Secret. Fucking snake. Now that I'm saying
you guys are
loud,
joining me, you're my homies.
And
all be bloaters.
We've been yelling about people doing it. I feel like, I guess that's technically one way to fight back of like you get to a safe settlement and then you have to have kids because if you don't, then everyone
repopulate.
Just dies. Yeah. And then they win, I guess, they being the infected.
Also, how many condoms are going to be left?
Probably not many.
Yeah, those things are all expired, if anything.
Yeah.
Coach Ben Scott's around.
Yeah, just whips out a handful. He's always good for a handful of condoms.
Who's that?
That is it's a Yellow Jacket. Catch up, Jimmy. Yeah, you wouldn't get it.
For one second, I honestly thought it was going to be like something from your guys' high school that you're talking about on the podcast.
Someone
like,
just
what
packs.
The hell's going on here?
Yes. Which would still go straight over your head.
Yeah, you have a coach from high school that just hand you guys condoms left and right.
Yeah.
Nah, we're not snitches like that.
All right. So I guess we didn't even say Tommy's mic drop moment is just because life stopped for you doesn't mean it has to stop for me. And Joel's like, blah, 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 I'm out of here. And that brings us to Ellie just checking out the new digs. She took a shower and she goes into the bedroom and sees a nice note saying, "I'm across the street, come find me," whatever, has some fresh clothes and the Diva Cup, the menstrual solution, which I do not understand the plight of being a woman and having to deal with this every month, but having to deal with that in a zombie apocalypse, I'm sure this was a fucking godsend to Ellie.
Yeah.
Having just a solution to that, one less thing to worry about. Bless up to Maria. And I think we had a pretty rough introduction to Maria, and I think this interaction with Ellie went a long way to showing her more tender side, showing that she is the type that would help this kind of troubled youthful girl. I don't know, just showing that maternal side to her. It almost brought back shades of what Tess was trying to do with Ellie way back in episode 2, where she kind of had this motherly figure, and I thought they were kind of vibing for a little bit there. But what are you guys thinking of Maria and this whole interaction?
I think coming off the Joel and Tommy interaction, it was perfect, because, you know, at this point I'm kind of thinking a little negative of Maria, you know, holding Tommy back, all this stuff. But their conversation kind of gives me the perspective that, you know, when Joel, especially when Tommy's saying all this "we" stuff and "we did these things" and Joel views it as "I," you know, that started making me think, okay, Tommy has definitely told his wife about this guy, Joel. And that's kind of explains why when she hears his name, when they first meet at the horse with the horses and everything, she's like, okay, I know who this guy is. But when Tommy describes those events as "we and Joel did this, me and Joel did that," to her mind, this guy's dangerous. And
yeah,
then she's also meeting Ellie, who herself is a little bit more on the aggressive side, doesn't really have those manners. And so I guess we're definitely, me personally, just being a little closed-minded, just loving following the story of our main characters. But when you do view them as an outsider, like Maria's position, I can understand why she would be this combative, I guess, towards both of them, and really like kind of looking at Tommy the wrong way, because, okay, if he's back, does this mean your past is going to come back? Like, are you going to become the old person that you were in, you know, in those years ago when you thought you were doing all those bad things? So I think the perspective of their conversation helps Maria for me here, because again, she still was a little aggressive towards Ellie, but all the reasons I just explained kind of held her back a little bit for me.
Ellie reacted, I think, exactly the way I wanted her to.
Yep. Yeah,
like, I agree. Not letting Maria strong arm her into thinking negatively about Joel. Mm-hmm. And B-Toms, to your comment that you had made of saying that Tommy, I guess, had like painted a certain picture towards Maria, I feel like it's Maria, like, I don't want to say, I mean, I will say, I guess, jumping to conclusions a little bit, like maybe having met Tommy, never having met Joel, it's easy to paint this caricature of Joel and being like, Tommy's this nice guy. Like, he obviously was just like following what Joel was doing and
filling
Joel
in the blanks for her. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I feel like the reality is probably that obviously Tommy was involved. I mean, Tommy is also like a Desert Storm veteran. He was in the military. He is capable of these things.
Joel said in the pilot or episode 2, whatever, Tommy fell in with the wrong crowd. I followed him to Boston just to have his back. Maria says here the exact opposite, that, oh, Tommy was just following Joel. I want to know, rookies, what do you believe to be the truth? Because I don't think there is an in-between. I don't think both of them fell in with the wrong crowd. I think there was one and the other followed because they're brothers.
Tommy seems much more of like a, like would shack up with people to do things, and maybe I could see Tommy, and we know the one thing that Joel said about Tommy, and I don't think Joel would really lie about Tommy, he has no incentive to, is that Tommy's like looking for a cause. I could totally see Tommy like jumping on some type of bandwagon, and then Joel being like, okay, well, fuck, I gotta obviously protect Tommy because he's known to do these things, and then as they do that, shit turns south and, you know, they were forced to do some things. I wouldn't say, it doesn't feel like it's anyone's really fault, but I feel like Maria has the wrong idea.
And I think you're 100% right here, Kyle, when you come to the conclusion that you're glad Ellie reacted that way, because she reacted the right way, because you guys already said it. Maria is painting a picture of her husband, the father of her child.
Yeah. And I don't blame her.
She wants him to be the hero of the story. And she's saying, well, Joel made Tommy do this, and Tommy's, you know, he's always been a follower. He had to follow Joel. And it's like, bro, he's an adult. If you don't agree with it, then don't freaking do it. And I do think that there is something to be said about the fact that Tommy is not agreeable with Maria in this situation. Like he says, we did this, Joel, we did, you know, it's Maria choosing. And Dave, I like what you said too, because as someone not just like riding with the homies, it makes sense. Like she is going to be a mother. She's married to Tommy. They have this nice little town that's protected. There was probably 100% something running through her mind when she heard the name Joel, like maybe we should get rid of him because it's only going to be trouble. And again, I already brought this up. Nobody likes the person trying to protect our homies from doing what we want to see them do. Yeah. I mean, nobody liked Chi Chi telling Gohan to do his studies and not freaking fight Cell, man. You know, I mean, she wasn't a bad person, but
I'll never forgive her. She wasn't a bad person, Gohan.
But, you know, he's too busy doing his studies instead of fighting Cell, man. I mean, come on, you know, but she wasn't bad. I mean, Dave, we got the Kamehameha shirt on. So
that was good.
Yeah. Dave? I mean, I don't want to say anything more. Obviously, I'm just taking this with tunnel vision as well, because obviously I have more knowledge. But yeah, I like both of your viewpoints on Maria.
Dave opened this conversation by saying, I don't like that she's holding Tommy back. The 6-month pregnant single mother in a zombie apocalypse doesn't want her newly betrothed to trek with two people she just met multiple states across the open country. She's really just holding him back, man.
Just be chill.
He's a peacock. You gotta let him fly.
Yeah, you gotta let him fly.
He's obviously itching at the bit to go kill people.
But Maria gives Ellie this piece of advice: be careful who you put your faith in. The only ones who can betray us are the ones we trust. And that's just good general advice, honestly. Navigating the zombie apocalypse, be careful who you trust.
But I mean, again, to Ellie, it's a little like stab at her, you know, being like, yo, you know what I'm saying? Don't trust Joel. And she's like, I love Joel.
Yeah,
he's my ride or die. Don't talk shit. You know, so, but also we don't want to gloss over the fact that this is where she finds out about Sarah.
Yes. Good point.
And yeah, that's really huge, because it's huge because it's almost like you forget, especially I'm sure for me and Brian, where we know the whole story. We know everything. It's almost like you forget that she didn't know this whole time. Yeah, we're cool as shit, dude. We play video games. We freaking know it. But, yeah, I mean, you almost sit there and assume that she's known Joel's whole story. I mean, something as big as Sarah that hasn't been brought up. And we have talked about the fact that Joel keeps saying no past talk. But I mean, they've been homies for a while and she had no idea he had a daughter. And the acting from Bella Ramsey, like there's not much of a facial change, but the change that goes on her face when she says, oh, the daughter, and even Maria's like, maybe I shouldn't have said that. Yeah. It's just money. And, you know, Tommy, I'm sorry I didn't write down the other child's name that passed away, but like Tommy
Kevin,
has
Kevin, bro.
There you go.
Rips
yeah.
in the chat.
Kevbot. So, you know, they have the memorial for Sarah. And it's not like Joel just showed up and Tommy ran over there and really quick wrote it to be like, you know. Yeah. I mean, they, you know, Tommy's a good guy, you know.
Tommy was there.
And it's also, he was there. He really was. And it's also another, you know, cool thing to say. Like, she's like, what were you, like a hairstylist when you're before the apocalypse? She's like, no, I was a freaking lawyer.
District attorney.
Yeah, right.
Which makes it all the more impressive how Ellie navigated that conversation. Went toe to toe with a freaking trained DA. Come on now.
And she says, too, she's like, you would make a good lawyer.
Yeah. I really like this interaction. It seems like our rooks weren't digging Maria 100%, but I don't know. I really liked her cameo personally, and she doesn't get very fleshed out or highlighted in the video game. So I'm not coming in with like, I love Maria from the video games. Fucking fight me, bro. I just really liked it.
I just
at this point,
Dave was right by saying where we're coming at it from. She's anti Joel, so we're slightly anti her.
Yeah. In the video game, she at this point, she is just very, very surface level NPC anti Joel, just because I'm protecting Tommy. That's it. There's nothing more. And the fact that they added that depth to her character, props to them.
And with that, Maria takes Ellie to the movies, which we kind of have a few clips there. The movie that they're playing, coincidentally, is The Goodbye Girl, which is from the 70s. There's a lot of kids in the audience. Apparently, it's not really a child-oriented film. It's kind of more of an adult premise, but the general plot line of it is a struggling single mother and her preteen daughter have to move in with a struggling Broadway actor. So it's kind of the actor develops a relationship with the girl, etc. It's not 100%, but there's kind of the same elements there as our story here with Joel and Ellie. That's just kind of a tip of the cap to them putting these little Easter eggs in. And then we have heartfelt conversation number two with Tommy and Joel, where Joel's just like fucking with his boots in the workshop, and Tommy comes in and apologizes, and Joel doesn't even bat an eyelash to the apology and goes right back to business about the trip to Colorado. You know, what is this, a suicide mission? What are my actual chances here? What do you guys think of this second conversation? Because the intensity is kind of a little bit behind us.
I want to almost go on a limit. This might be one of my favorite scenes of the series so far. I really like this. This was amazing to watch. It was nice.
A lot of emotion being shown.
Yeah, Joel kind of just like get that release, to use that term again, that Dave kind of began us using earlier. It just was really good to watch. The acting was fucking phenomenal too. It was just everything about it was so good. It's Joel finally kind of admitting things out loud. I love how Tommy just kind of pulls up a seat and just says, like, from the beginning, like, it's just like that brotherly kind of acceptance of like, all right, just like lay it all on me, just give me everything, and then we'll figure everything out. It was just like a really, really, really nice moment.
Yeah, Pedro absolutely crushed this scene. I felt all the emotions that he was going through. My eyes were watering a little bit here as well, especially when he's talking. Like, I like how he started off the conversation by saying, you know, how easy of a trek is this? Because that kind of, once he got the okay from Tommy that the trek is a cakewalk, that's when he was like, okay, now I can let it all out and ask him to take Ellie from me now. Because if he hadn't said that, he would have probably forced himself to stay with Ellie and be like, okay, I still have to continue watching her. But he led with that, which allowed him to just completely open up about everything. And Pedro just absolutely crushed it here, man. Kyle, I think you're right. I wouldn't say it's my favorite scene so far of the season, of the series so far, but it's definitely up there. It was just so well done by Pedro here. And I was definitely in my feels while watching this scene.
I agree. Brian, let me ask you a question as a side note on the same topic, but a little bit of a sidebar here. What are your thoughts as a game player where we're getting this storyline where Joel's trying to say he's a little fragile and they're actually showing us that he's fragile? Are you okay with that? I'm pretty sure. And again, listen, I say this every episode almost. I'm not 100% on how the game goes. It's been a long time, but I don't remember him being like this, where I'm pretty sure he was just straight up badass at all times, right?
I think they're, let me rewind that a little bit. I feel some type of way about it because I'm okay with them making him a little bit more emotional and a little bit more like putting down his walls and like showing tears and this range of emotion. I think my biggest complaint, especially in this scene, I think the writing came up very flat for me. Like, he flat out says, all I've done is fail and fail and fail again. It's like, okay, that's a little bit on the nose. Us as an audience should have already come to that realization that that is his trauma. He's already breaking down to his brother. Like, don't make him say, all I do is fail, fail, fail these people. Like, it just seemed a little bit lazy to me. The acting, for what it was, fantastic. It's just the words coming out of his mouth were so on the nose, it was almost comical to me. But to answer your question, overall, I am okay with them making him a little bit more weak. I would imagine that's the minority of the fan base. It seemed like in the previous episodes when they diverged and made him a little bit quote unquote weaker, the fan base was like, no, we want him to be the badass. But for the purposes of the show, it makes us kind of relate to him a little bit more. It makes us empathize with him a little bit more. It makes us, you know, go through the gauntlet of emotions with him a little bit more. So I think it really works for the show. Probably was necessary for the show. But the writing in this scene in particular, thumbs down for me. I thought it was lame.
You took the words right out of my mouth when it comes to answering that question. Like, am I okay with them doing that? And I think that we've answered this throughout the episodes where it's just straight up for the TV show. You can't have like an OP main character like that as your main character protagonist of a TV show. You know, you have to have some vulnerability, and I don't need to say anymore because you kind of nailed it there. When it comes to the writing, I don't think it was, I'm closer to the Kyle and Dave side of things. I think that it is because we're game players that we have more knowledge, and we don't, again, need them to tell us to our face. It's not to bring up the Dexter analogy again, but like, you know, there's always, it comes to certain things where people were like, Dexter's narrating in his mind. It's like he would just like tell us exactly what he's thinking. It's like, we know, dude, we're watching the show. You don't have to tell us. There's certain things like that. But I mean, the acting saved the entire thing. Like, I think that it was amazing. I don't think it was my favorite scene, but I think it was definitely top of the series for me. So I just think that at first I was like, they're making him kind of fragile, but it makes sense. Like, they literally say what they say, he's 56 or something, right? That's the age they say. They name drop it. And it's funny because in age drop, but they say in the game that he's older, and I guess you can infer how old he is, but they never say how old. And it was always like this thing in the fandom, like, how old can he be? Like, how old, you know, because he's OP, he's a badass, he's a freaking killer. How old can this guy be? And then the fact that they say it, and they've been making Pedro Pascal, you know, Joel in the show, start to look more and more like aged and, you know, weathered. So, I mean, I think it's good for the TV show to do it that way.
What was it ever covered why they couldn't do it together? Like,
so that was my other thing. I would say, and I don't remember which one of you brought it up, Dave or Kyle, but the joke was, if you make Tommy go, Maria will freaking kill you. Why wouldn't you go to be Tommy 6? Like, I was expecting Joel to say, can you come with me? Not, can you do it for me?
Yeah. That was kind of what it is in the game, though. When you arrive, Joel also wants to hand off the mission to Tommy for kind of the same reasons, right?
I think, honestly, I really do think they just wanted to do the thing where it's like, I mean, okay, listen, we're going to get to it. And the part where he has this whole throwdown with Ellie and he's like, you're not my daughter. Get the hell out of my face. Like, that's in the game. And that's amazing. One might be my favorite of the episode, that scene. And it's kind of word for word from the game. That does happen. But I think they really,
now. I mean,
yeah, okay. I just think that they really wanted to hammer down the point that, like, I'm not coming. And then, oh, wait, I do really care about Ellie. I am coming. Because if he does the whole, I'll come with you, that whole thing never happens. They can't do that for the TV show.
I think Alki was saying the same exact thing while we were watching. He's like, what was the purpose of that whole thing? And it's just like, it's to show how weak Joel is at, where he's at in his mind. He's at the point, you're right, Jimmy. I totally was expecting him to at least ask Tommy to come with him, not just hand the whole thing off to Tommy in the first place. But it makes sense, I guess, because when he goes into that failure speech, he himself already knows he could crack at any moment. And the weaker he gets, that puts Ellie more at risk. And so that plays back into the fear of, you know, wanting to even go with her because he doesn't want to have to watch again that's the Sarah incident all over again. He doesn't want to have to watch that happen. So,
yeah, I mean,
yeah, I guess he just feels like a liability himself.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's
and of course, Ellie had to hear all of that. And she, and I get it. She is definitely so attached to Joel that she is very dependent on him. So the speech should have, at least in my mind, hit Joel right there. When Ellie is talking about how much he means to her, I think he should have just kind of sucked it up and just been like, okay, let's go. I don't think we needed the whole extra night for him to sleep on it. But I think still, I'm with you, Jimmy, that this was a phenomenal scene still at the end of the day. I think Ellie crushed it here as well with her emotions. And
yeah, I think this is the best time to bring up the difference between the game. Tommy and Joel have this discussion that I think Ellie overhears in the game. She finds out that Tommy's going to be taking over the mission. She steals a horse and then rides off on her own, and it's kind of like another mission where you and Tommy have to like give chase to her. You kind of like fight some more raiders trying to save her because she like goes to this separate ranch. And then this conversation with Joel and Ellie happens at this ranch away from the Jackson, Wyoming settlement after Ellie tried to run away. So that's kind of how the progression happens in the video game. The timelines don't exactly make it work so seamlessly in the show, but I think they do it well enough. But yeah, this Joel and Ellie conversation, like Jimmy said, they plucked it right out of the dang game. Again, like they've been doing, the room, even in their like new apartment, looks great. We start the scene with Ellie reading this teenage girl's diary from 2003. She's like, is this really all they had to worry about? Like skirts, how to match their outfits. And it's like one of those things that puts it all into perspective. And then she's like, so what? What are you even doing here? You just going to ditch me, dude? It was good. It was explosive. I think they were like both sides of this argument were fantastic. This has been like bubbling up since they met. Honestly, it's just like, listen, bro, do you care about me or not? I have abandonment issues. You can't just keep fucking playing with me like this. Are you in? Shit or get off the pot, in the words of Barney Stinson. You know, it's like, figure it out, bro.
He tried to get off the pot, and then he went back onto the pot.
He's yo-yoing a turd, as Matt Griffin would say.
I was very hyped, though, when it's the next morning, and Ellie and Tommy are walking to the stable, and Joel's already there, and he's like, all right, I'll offer you a choice. Of course she's going to take fucking Joel, but I just love when she shoves the bag to him, and he's just like, let's go. And I'm just like, all right, we're back in it.
Wind it up, baby.
I was hyped. Yeah, it was hype, man. It got the gears going for me.
I think Joel has a knack for putting his foot in his mouth at kind of the worst moments. But like when Ellie's with a calm manner, it's like, listen, I'm not your daughter, but, you know, I've lost people, too. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you have no idea what loss is. Like, how could he possibly go to this 14-year-old who 100% does understand what loss is more than most 100-year-old people do?
Yep.
I think that was the point of the scene, that Joel was very much in the wrong for a lot of it, and it gets resolved quickly. But, you know, that's just Joel being Joel.
Yeah, that was a tough line. But he makes up for it, I think, when he's like, you know, yeah, no, I was going to sneak out of here and whatever. Mm-hmm. And he's like, but that was about 30 minutes ago. That was good. I really liked that.
Dave, I agree. The comedy of her just not even finishing the sentence, throwing the duffel bag, like, yeah, let's get this show on the road.
Tommy's like, all right, like, this is perfectly fine with me.
He was happy.
Yeah. And then when Joel asks for the gun, too, and he's like, yeah. And then he tries to, Joel, like, explains why he wants the gun. And he's like, Joel, I already said yes.
Yeah.
That was really good, too.
He uses the term borrow the gun too, not can I have the gun, which is great. Good brotherly moment. You know, I love seeing brothers interact on the screen, and if they can pull it off, and just kind of the brothers don't show emotions like conversationally. They already had their heart to heart, and now they're just like wearing it on the sleeve. Here, you can take my gun. Adios, big brother. What? Yeah. Mm.
I will be honest. This felt very final to me. This felt like a potentially final interaction between the two of them, of like where they get the lines like that, like adios big brother, but they're still like, you know, and they make the joke of like you said, I'll borrow the gun, and it's like the implications of
there's a place for you when you're back, when you come back,
all that kind of stuff. It felt, I was like, my ears were perked up, and I was like, this is feeling,
your spidey
like,
sense was tingling.
Like sneakily foreshadowing, could like, be set the us end up of Joel, for terrible things,
which it was.
Joel's doing fine, dude. He's fine.
Yeah. We'll get there. Let's get there.
He's fine.
Yeah, let's get there. So Joel and Ellie ride off. We have another nice little travel montage, and kind of the dynamic between them seems a lot lighter since they've had their heart to heart. You know, they're doing the shooting practice, they're having conversations, they're like camping. This is where they have like, he's explaining football to her, like, too soon for me.
Yes.
Dave, you did bring up Kansas shitty. I feel like we were talking too much smack. We need to call them Super Bowl champion. Kansas shitty Chiefs. Congratulations. I will say that like Joel could not say.
Yeah.
Congrats.
Right.
Yeah.
You bastard.
Not emotionally.
Don't choke
recovered
on it.
So I really liked the shooting scene when he's like describing all of the steps And she was like, Jesus, so you gonna impregnate it or shoot it or whatever.
Yeah, right.
I literally laughed out loud. I think that was the funniest line of the whole fucking episode. She's just fucking fantastic. I can't imagine anyone who was maybe shaky about her in the beginning getting to this episode and watching it and not being like, she's it.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that.
Amazing.
Yep.
Yeah. So good.
And she asked Joel, hey, back before the outbreak, is that how everything, like the whole country, did that work like it did in Jackson? And he's like, no. There were essentially two schools of thought. She's like, well, which one were you? He's like, neither. I just did my job. I built things. And she's like, ooh, the contractor. That sounds cool.
This was so good. I loved that. I loved it.
That was funny. He's like, yeah, we were cool.
Everybody loves contractors.
It's funny. I mean, literally something like that where a contractor is just common to everybody back then and to us in the real world right now. And she's just like, what's a contractor? Sounds badass. He's like, he was badass, wasn't he?
He still kind of is.
Yeah, no, hell yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no, I would say he's mildly badass.
Contracted killer.
I mean, he's fulfilling contracts.
Oh, yeah. No, it's funny is one of the reviews I was reading when he's telling her how American football works. And she's like, so basically it's just moving forward. And he's like, yes, but violently. They're just like, well, that could be an analogy for this entire series. It's just constantly pushing yourself forward, but violently.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We're about to get some right now.
Yeah, we about to get some right now. So they arrive at UEC, the University of Eastern Colorado. Go Bighorns. And they're kind of just walking through the campus. Joel comments on his thoughts about the quote unquote college experience. Joel rewinds his previous answer. You know what? I don't want to be a rancher. I actually want to be a singer. And that is definitely an answer he would have never given her earlier in the series. Just like peeling back the layers to this onion. Am I right, boys?
He's got to sing for us.
He's speaking about onions, dude.
He better be fucking singing. He better be singing by the end of the season. That has to happen.
I know that Pedro would definitely be down to do a singing scene. So if they want to give us one, he would be into it. So I really hope we get one.
Is he a good singer?
I don't know, but he seems like somebody would be down to do it.
Yeah, I did say earlier that in the video games, he's very musically inclined. Mm-hmm. He loves music, and they haven't really talked about it too much yet, so I'm glad that they're starting to get into it now.
So going through the campus, the scene with the monkeys, or I guess the first scene with the monkeys, that is one that was plucked right out of the games, like that circular kind of structure stuff that they're moseying through. You see the monkeys scurry. That's one of those things that just brings you back. What I will comment is this whole scene in the college campus was very brief. And admittedly, there's not so much content that even happens in the game. However, what they do is as you're kind of going through the buildings, they give you a lot of kind of clues to what the Firefly activity was when they were occupying the college. And I thought it was a lot of worthwhile information that was very interesting. I'm thinking maybe they want to keep that close to their chest and not reveal anything that's going on with the Fireflies. But Jimmy, correct me if I'm wrong, back in the game, I think this whole campus setting played kind of a more significant role. It was definitely multiple hours of gameplay, as I recall, working your way through this, but it obviously only took about 10 minutes of screen time, which I was a little disappointed with. But to be fair, they did cover everything they needed to cover.
To be fair.
I mean, picture how they were inferring, like, oh, they're packing up. This is a list of things to pack up. Here's the map. This is where they're going. Times 100. Like, they were giving us, here's some notes that you can read. And just to think about the fact that in earlier episodes, we're talking about Easter eggs that you pick up throughout the game. Here's the comic for Sam and all the different things like that. Well, in this part of the game, you're picking up different pieces of notes from the Fireflies and you're finding out like, oh, that's what they were doing here. And, you know, and starts giving you some more of a narrative of what's going on in the game.
The big question here, obviously, is what the fuck happened? Because obviously they had to pack up shit and get out of there quickly, because even Tommy, who said people fairly often make the trip to this campus, you know, come back alive and everything. So this must have been fairly recent. So I'm just curious what could have caused them to just want to just up and leave immediately. Like, I don't think it was those Raiders. Like, I don't think Raiders would have had the whole Firefly system up and leaving. Like, there had to be some.
Any other existential threat at play that could have caused them to leave in a hurry?
Yeah, monkeys.
Yeah, monkeys.
But if it was clickers, I just feel like if it was clickers, we would have seen more of the like the fungus growing on the walls. But again, I was just looking out. That was stuff I was looking out for, but that was just my thought process because Tommy did make it seem like people come down here fairly often. And so for him to not even have known that they had left already, you know, shit must have went really bad.
Infected and clicker monkeys, dude.
The monkeys was odd to me just because I was like, they're in fucking Colorado. Like, where the fuck do these monkeys come from?
Joel says the throwaway, the science labs, leftover from the animal testing labs.
So they're all just humping for years and years. And that's
because I was just so focused on the fact of like, where the fuck did these monkeys come from that I literally missed the line where they told us where the fuck
that's where they came from.
Whatever.
So like Jimmy says, they come across this packing list. If you didn't pause it at the top, it says Colorado to Salt Lake City. They hear a loud bang upstairs, go to investigate. Surprise, it's just more monkeys. At least it ain't clickers. Another scene plucked right out of the video games. I remember being scared shitless of this scene because I was expecting it to be clickers, but it was just monkeys. But they made it so loud in the video games for a jump scare, and I was like, those bastards got me. Though I digress. They see on the attack board, you know, the Fireflies relocated to Salt Lake City, and our heroes are just left, well, fuck us, we'll just go kick rocks. Do we want to go to Salt Lake City now? What's the play here? They don't get too much time to be able to hash it out because they see movement outside. It's a couple Raiders. They try and sneak out the back while Joel is hitching up the horse. One of the Raiders gets the jump on him. He's able to take care of business, but at the cost of being gravely injured by the splinter baseball bat. And they just narrowly escape on horseback. So I went through a decent bit. Take it away, guys.
Just pure disappointment.
Yeah, I almost don't even know what to say. do you mean disappointment, like, in what way?
No, it wasn't like, all right, it wasn't totally disappointing, but it's just like we had so many threats at this point, and Joel has done fine to come out unscathed, and it's going to be the one random Raider that gets the best of him and stabs him.
In Joel's defense, I will say that he was not expecting the bat to splinter in that way. If the bat stayed intact, the Raider wouldn't have been able to do anything. He would have just grabbed him like normal, choked him out, and then snapped his neck. The fact that the bat splintered perfectly turned it into straight up a knife. So when Joel pulled him in, boom, he gets stabbed. And I love how it was the typical, yeah, he's dead. And then you look down, it's like, oh, shit. You know, and again, it really does lean back into the whole he's more fragile thing. It's another like, is it his ear or whatever? Like the Raider almost got the jump on him. He pretty much got the jump on him. Ellie again had his back, had his six and saved him, and just enough time for him to be able to move out of the way. But I would feel like our homie Joel would know to be looking and not let the Raider get that close. But
I feel like they set us up for it though.
Yeah, something had to go wrong, of course.
Like they he was literally crying, saying like, "I'm not the guy I used to be." Like something could happen.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah. Exactly. Oh, okay. Yeah. That's what I meant when I was saying it was leaning into the fragile thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, yeah. I wasn't shocked. I was just okay. That's a lie. I was shocked that it happened, but like, it's not like incredibly, you know, crazy that he would get hurt in that way. I was just my issue was that like, why the fuck did he pull it out?
He was grabbing at him like, dude, not pull that out. And then he pulls it out, and of course the blood starts going, and it's like, okay, this is what we wanted to avoid by leaving it in there. But I have no idea how they're gonna get out of this. The only thing I can think of is maybe Maria or Tommy, for whatever reason, was following them, and then they saw the events of what went down, and then they're just going to get on the horse, go back to town, and try and get some medical attention. I just can't.
It's 5 days.
I can't imagine this is the end of Tommy. Like, my video game knowledge is that vague to the point where I could totally, I guess, see that Joel dies here, but I don't just again, based off like the covers that I'm picturing of the Last of Us video game, I just, there's no way, but there's also a way, I guess. I just, hey man, I don't know. It's,
they're covering the full game in season one. We're pretty close to the end of the game. Joel could die.
And this is, and that's what I'm saying. And like, to go off what Kyle was saying with his goodbye to Tommy, he's like, this could be it. Like in terms of the goodbye for one of them. And I guess I wouldn't have not expected it to be Joel's goodbye. I thought it would have been more so goodbye to Tommy, but, and then maybe Tommy picks up the mission from Joel, but my mind was racing. I of course had 1,000 questions. Like I'm asking kind of like right now and just running my head through everything that I was experiencing, but I couldn't believe it. And when he falls off the horse and Ellie's just sitting over him, like,
Cal Drogo, man.
Yeah, I need you. I can't do this without you. It's
Cal Drogo got scratched and went down like a little like a little baby.
It was because of the witch, man.
In a zombie apocalypse, man, stabbed in the gut. I mean, I feel like it's got to be game over. But
dude, almost like real life. Don't lie to me. Gut is game over.
Oh yeah, yeah. Dave, look me in the eyes through this Zoom call right now. Don't freaking lie to me. I'm not gonna curse here, but. Did you watch the preview for the next episode?
I did. And he's not in it. He's not in the preview. So that's why I'm having all these thoughts is like, it's definitely the previews getting to me because I was, the episode ended and I was like, okay, if we're going to watch the preview, of course, what I'm looking out for is Joel and he's not in it. So
yeah,
I mean, it definitely has a lot to do with what the actual episode is going to be.
Yeah. True. And I mean, obviously
not say too much about what the next episode is going to be.
Yeah. It'll be a recovery episode for Joel.
There is no shot that I feel like that's how he goes out.
Yeah.
Her just like trying to pack his wound on the side of a railroad track. I can't see it. I feel like there's got to be more.
This is the throw it in Ellie's face that she's never experienced loss before. Like Joel has been talking about. Yeah, right. About
Joel's like, you want loss? Episodes. I'll give you a loss.
Yeah, I'll give you a loss now. Yeah, we have three left.
There's three more episodes. I feel like.
Well, no, this, 7, 8, 9. Yep.
And I think in the next episode, we might not really get to it. So, 8, if it happens in 8, if he actually ends up going out from it in 8, maybe, and we get 9 as like a. Like an aftermath type of episode, but it feels like it would be better for it to like happen in 9. And then we're like, oh my God. And that's like the end of the whole season. And everyone's like, where's season 2? So
remember the end of the game is the end of the season.
Yeah.
So, and it's been confirmed. So when the game, I'm not going to say anything else. So I'm not going to say if there's cliffhangers at the end of the game or if it was final end of the game.
If he's going to die, I think, and it's not this, I almost kind of appreciate the trial run of my emotions where it's like, we're getting it out of the way. Yeah. Where it's like, all right, we've been through the training of him dying. So now it's like, I'm more prepared to handle it when it comes through because the whole episode, like we've been saying, he's like, I ain't what I used to be and all this shit. So it feels like he might go out.
Do you have any theories, Kyle, on how they're going to get out of this one?
I just have no fucking clue.
It's got to be Maria. It's got to be Maria, like trailing them, thinking, like stalking them, just being like, I got to find out what Joel's intentions really are because they weren't obviously telling her anything in the town. So maybe she was following, saw everything. That's the only possible thing I can think of. But
she's carrying a child, dude. 5 days.
You're right.
How far did they go?
It is a week. A week's travel.
Well, I'm sorry. I meant like.
Well, they did it in 5, but
I meant from like the college. So like it could be like, and I'm thinking like video game style, like Ellie, like this is like an Ellie mission where like you become Ellie now and you have to go back into the college and like get medical supplies because it was, they make the comment that like it was like there were doctors there and things like that. But all like what the fuck can Ellie possibly do besides pack the wound? Like there's a lot of snow, you just stuff it in there, make it all cold.
She's gonna have to take care of the raiders too. All herself.
She has the gun too. She just picks them
she's
off.
Ready.
They did practice shooting and
it might as well just be Ellie's show. Then Joel's definitely gonna
That's what they're preparing us for.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Ellie, I mean listen, man, the Last of Us. I was just gonna say that, Brian. It's the last of call us, it that, man.
Yeah.
And then there were none, dude.
Yeah, that's
So that's what that's I'm gonna say. And we're gonna get like an Ellie training mission. Wait, I mean, it gets training, but it's more of like her actually using the training because she hasn't really used it a ton yet. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm gonna say. And then Joel's gonna be like, you know what? touch your eye, like you can survive on your own out here. He's gonna feel better.
No, I can die.
He's gonna, yeah, exactly.
Jumps off a cliff.
Yeah.
He's just gonna, aim for the bushes.
Aim for the bushes. Dude, a couple other guys' lines in this episode. The peacock and aim for the bushes.
True, the peacock. Yeah, forgot about that. I don't know. This was a great mic drop moment. I think it was a great way to end the episode. Obviously, you guys have no clue what's going to happen next, how they're going to get out of it. That's always a good way to leave your audience, honestly. Yeah.
Yep.
So
I do have that sinking feeling that it's going to be episode 8 that we actually get our conclusion that we're looking for. And I think that's going to hurt just on a personal level of just 2 weeks of not knowing.
I think, again, just to reiterate, you know, the pace, we were at the midway point last episode, if you want to call it that, 5 out of 9 episodes. Regardless, that's usually going to be in most TV shows the high, like one of the high points of the season. And so we're kind of reset ourselves back at like an episode 1 pacing with introducing new characters. But it did give us a great cliffhanger that, of course, I'm just ready for the next episode. Like Kyle said at the beginning of the episode, this 9-day wait rather than 7-day wait definitely felt a little bit longer than 9 days. But I'm so excited already to get back into to the next episode.
Me and Brian might have to just let it go with that. We don't need to say anything else.
I got nothing more to say about
there we go.
The future of our protagonists. I thought I this was good because you're not going to.
I did actually watch the preview because I was like, I need to know. Like, show me his face or so, like, what's going on? And it obviously gave away nothing. So I was like, whatever, fuckers.
Yeah. Well, I guess job better.
Yeah, I guess we'll leave HBO with a whatever fuckers. As always, though, if you like what you heard, be sure to give Bingetown TV a follow on Twitter and Instagram. Visit us on BingetownTV.com and subscribe to our show on Spotify, YouTube, the Apple Podcast app, or wherever else you may find your podcast. Once again, we are Bingetown TV. And thanks for listening.
Cool, cool, cool.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.